Thank you. Please be seated. And let's turn in our Bibles to Romans and chapter 14. Romans chapter 14. While you're making your way there, let me quickly mention that we're continuing in our series of expositions in the magisterial epistle of Paul to the Romans. Last time we had begun Romans chapter 14, and we simply looked at the first verse, which says, "As for the one who is weak in faith, welcome him, but do not quarrel over opinions." And basically that verse gave us the sense of direction for the rest of the chapter, in that, first of all, it is clearly dealing with a problem in the church that was there between what are being called here the weak in faith and those who are strong in faith. So what we did was to spend a bit of time trying to understand what that phrase meant. And it soon became apparent that those who are weak are in terms of not fully experiencing something of the liberty that is won for them through Christ. And that is because of their own background. They have certain experiences in their religious background that consequently holds them back. And it is clearly something that can only be dealt with either through sanctification over a long haul or through another generation that would have been exposed to the wider community of believers. And consequently, those that are understood as being strong in the faith, it is more to do with their ability to enjoy a lot more of this Christian liberty. We also saw that it was a very practical subject, because it's to do with the unity of the church, which I'll be dealing with in a moment. And so we saw that we are urged, first of all, how to treat those who are weak in the faith, and we are told there it is to welcome them. And then we are also told how not to treat those who are weak in the faith, or in faith, and it is not to quarrel over opinions. So we spent quite a bit of time in that introductory verse. One of the issues that was emphasized then, which I'd like to repeat, is that we just have to come to terms with the fact that the Christian church will never be homogeneous. And it will never be homogeneous because of our backgrounds, where we are coming from when we are saved. Now, when I say that, I don't simply mean our backgrounds when we are in the same community and we are living together, but I'm talking in terms of our backgrounds beyond our immediate communities. Because the church is supposed to be one. And because it is one, consequently, it becomes quite a challenge for us, coming from those backgrounds, diverse backgrounds, to come and be one church. It is the mind of God that His love in our hearts by His Spirit should overcome those artificial barriers. That it should cause us to immediately think in terms of acceptance, and then in that acceptance deal with whatever the issues are that are causing us to want to go separate ways, rather than first of all giving a complete checklist to a brother or sister seeing if they tick everything correctly before we start speaking in terms of real and meaningful fellowship. Again, speaking about this chapter, what it is really showing us is this, that what splits a church or God's people is not just doctrine. Doctrine does split, but it's not just doctrine. And it's also not just moral issues. In other words, issues that are clearly to do, for instance, with sexual immorality, stealing, violence, physical violence, fraud, gossip, slander, I mean, those kinds of things are obvious. But rather, that even attitudes split churches. Attitudes. In other words, me being disaffectioned towards you. That the moment your name is mentioned to me, I grow cold feet. The moment anything is to do with you, I just feel no. That attitude also causes churches to go separate ways. And what we're dealing with in this chapter actually is about attitudes. Trust me. It's not about doctrine. But it's attitudes towards one another caused by the fact that we have these major different backgrounds that cause us to have certain wrong attitudes towards one another. So for instance, this afternoon, we're looking at verse 2 and verse 3. Romans 14, verse 2 and verse 3. One person believes he may eat anything, while the weak person eats only vegetables. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains, and let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats, for God has welcomed him. Our message, as you can notice on the screen this afternoon, is simply do not despise or judge one another. And you can already see from that that is to do with attitudes. Despising happens inside. Judging, and by this it means an attitude of condemnation, happens on the inside. But invariably, it then affects the way we relate. In my Christian life, and especially in my years as a pastor, I have found that what has damaged church life the most has not been doctrine. We've been very clear. It's not even been issues of morality. We've been very clear. It's been this whole issue of disaffection, this whole issue of attitude, negative attitude towards one another. So that even just what somebody said in one sentence, just one sentence, becomes such a big issue that when you think about it, you realize, no, there must be something in the background. We can't kill each other over a sentence. And you soon discover that, yes, there are attitude issues in the background, and they are affecting the health of the church. Now, what I hope you will notice here is that the Apostle Paul uses examples. One of the examples he's using is the one that we are looking at, and we'll be teaching in a moment, and that is to do with vegetarians versus non-vegetarians. But if you peep at verse 5, for instance, you notice that the Apostle Paul says, one person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. So that's, again, is another example. And the issue here is not so much The examples themselves, although they are quite enlightening, and we'll talk a little bit more about them, but it is the instruction that the Apostle Paul then goes on to give, having given an example. So, for instance, in our text, it speaks about one person believes he may eat anything, while the weak person eats only vegetables. But notice the instruction in the next verse. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains, and let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats, for God has welcomed him, and he opens it up further. And even when he deals with the issue of days, holy days, and what you can do on those days, notice verse 5. One person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Notice what he wants to deal with. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God. And so that's really what he wants to deal with. He's got many examples, I suppose, that he'd have given. But it's the instruction after that. What must we do in the light of this kind of heterogeneous mixture in the church? So he's beginning with that issue of vegetarians and non-vegetarians. But I hope you notice here that this is not for the purpose of weight loss. But rather, it's a matter of conscience. That's what is happening here. It's a matter of conscience. In other words, the person who is abstaining from eating whatever other people seem to just be eating anyhow, the reason why he's abstaining is not because he wants to maintain his weight, but it's because he thinks, if I eat, I sin. I have problems with this. Problems of conscience. And therefore, I cannot do what you are doing. We can open up examples, and I want to throw out a few. Once upon a time in the US, when you could own slaves, it was a big issue. There were those who strongly felt it was sinful for you to own a human being like property, and therefore they could not do so. And there were others who were saying, what's your problem? I have these slaves. They love me. I love them. I look after them pretty well. So what's your problem? I go with them to church. Okay, they don't sit with me in the same pews. They sit in the slave gallery, but they are listening to the gospel. And as some of you have read history since then, the church split. The Baptist church split. And that's where what we call today Southern Baptists come from. When it was not really a doctrinal split, it was a split between the north and the south of the U.S. because in the south, that's where the plantations were, where the slaves were owned, where slavery was really taking place. We could also speak in terms of, imagine ex-Muslims, especially in the Middle East. Try and imagine them who, they are now Christians, and they used to eat only halal because they knew whatever is behind that word halal. Then they come to visit you and you are now unwrapping your meat and they find it says halal there. They will have major problems to imagine that now, as Christians, they should be eating halal. Now, all of you here, you're looking at me wondering, what's the problem? Yes. Because we are not from that background. So ask halal or no halal, please put it on my table, let me eat. But that's the kind of background issue that we're talking about here. Very, very real. Let's talk about a little more concerning ourselves. For us, usually it has to do with things like, for instance, dressing. You don't go to church as a sister in the Lord in a dress, rather in a trousers, on Sunday. Maybe now you do, but I've never forgotten, we had some American visitors to UNSA when I was a university student, and a number of them were Baptists, so they discovered who the Baptists were. We befriended one another, and then Sunday came, and these girls came to get into the church bus in trousers. And I've never forgotten how we said, excuse me, you can't come to church this way. What's the problem? No, so the ladies quickly sort of ran into October and got detained and came back. So while we're driving between UNSA and Lusaka Baptist Church, we managed to convince them. So as they were coming out on the other side, they had put tengas around themselves. For them, that was nothing. For us, somehow, we thought there was going to be a major scandal at church if these ladies just walk out of this bus in trousers. But it's a big, very big issue. I recall my very first visit to Canada, I probably used this example before. I never used to wear jackets here at KBC, just never. It wasn't part of my life. So when I was going to Canada, I didn't carry any jacket. I mean, I owned one, but I didn't carry any. And thankfully, God was gracious that my suitcase suffered some major damage by the time we arrived. So the brother who got me took me to my room, my bedroom, and said, look, let's take your suitcase for fixing. So began emptying. And then he says to me, there's no jacket in here. I said to him, it's okay, I don't need one. He said, you need one. Nobody is going to allow you into that pulpit without a jacket. Oh, you know, that was quite a teaching care for me. So as we took the suitcase, we also bought a jacket. And that's the one I wore during that period. So for us today, issues of dressing can be quite big. And when we get visiting preachers, sometimes usually even before they leave their particular countries, they ask the question, dress code? And I normally say, well, you know, something sort of smartish, you know, at least a tie. Simply because if they walked in here, some of them, the way they dress back home, you'll be accusing me of new Calvinism. So that's obviously one area. The other area is music. It's a major issue. Again, to do with backgrounds, musical instruments, musical tunes. The brethren who have come from that world, who therefore really genuinely stumble when a Christian is listening to what is called worldly music, they genuinely stumble. While others, they listen to that music, it's just music. Tunes, exactly the same thing. There are some Christians that have real, genuine difficulties with some kind of tunes, while others, it's their life, just part of their background. Yesterday we spoke about hip-hop, you will remember those of you who were in the seminar. There are some Christians who, you know, that's devilish completely. While for others, they are able to somehow pass through all that sort of and are able to hear the actual words and discover, oh, it's actually Romans 8 that is. But for others, you know, it's the tune itself. You just can't hear Romans 8 in it at all. So it's things like that for us that are real, that cause these attitude issues with one another. I can throw in issues of drinking alcohol. I think that, again, is one of those areas. For most of us sitting in here, it's obviously a no-go area. Simple. Christians don't drink. Until you travel around the world. and you find that they actually tell you just before a meal that we hope you won't mind us having a little bit of wine. And discover that's just their life, that's their culture, that's their background. They do take a little alcohol as part of their diet. Smoking is even worse, isn't it? Christians don't smoke. Amen? Again, I'm sorry to give you some bad news. Yeah, I think for me the greatest shock was again traveling outside this country. These preaching errands I go for. And being in the home of a church deacon. And I could smell that there was a lot of smoke in the house. Until he said to me, I hope you won't mind, I'd like to have a smoke. And I've never forgotten how my rating for him went from there, boom, it hit the floor. My very first preaching appointment in Brazil, I was preaching there, and there was another pastor from outside Brazil was preaching. And I arrived first, so I spent quite a bit of time. Then he arrived later, and then he said to me, let's go for a walk. We're meeting for the first time. And it's somebody I highly respected. I think I still do, although it suffered a major dent that day. When I was walking, he just pulled out a cigar and said, again, the same thing, I hope you won't mind. You know, I've had quite a long trip. You know, you sort of pretend, you know, I don't mind, it's all right. But in my heart, I was processing it. Because, you know, it's an author you respect, read one or two of his books, and it suffered a major dent at that point. So anyway, these things continue. Displays of affection, especially public display, is again a major issue for us. Again, this was my experience going out of this country, and this one was more specifically in South Africa. You are worshiping the Lord in church, and then the man and woman who are in front of you, they are like this, with a hymn book like this, and you are behind, you are this. Now, how do I worship? Can't you do this at home? But my surprise, I'm the only one who seems to be having this problem. Everybody else is just singing wonderfully to the Lord. Now, clearly, it's backgrounds that are causing all these things. And it's very easy for you in that kind of context to say, no, I'm definitely in the wrong place. Let's have another church across the road where we'll now be doing things according to Zambia and not what is happening here. Here, everybody's backslidden, they're bad, they might not even be saved. I want to repeat, It's due to different backgrounds, and also the differences are very, very, they are deep-seated. So as well as at a superficial level, the tendency, let me use the word, the inevitability of you passing judgment on somebody else because of those kinds of differences is very real. It's not because you are just born a malicious person. It's that it's a matter of conscience to you. Your conscience bothers you about something like this. And that's really what was happening here when we're talking about he who eats only vegetables and he who eats anything. It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same. It's this reality that a true child of God can't. And the other one is saying, but what's the problem with you? Okay. So, the tendency is to part ways. The Apostle Paul is saying, no, the church is one. We should not have churches being split over such issues. We should instead learn to do what he's just talking about now. And first of all, those who are stronger in faith, he's saying they must not despise the weaker ones. They must not despise the weaker ones. There it is in verse 3. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains. In other words, that's the normal attitude, the attitude which is wrong, and it is an attitude of superiority, a sense of superiority. Because you can do this with no qualms whatsoever. You can go from there and be ministered to spiritually, read the Bible and pray, and your conscience is not bothering you at all. So obviously you look down on those who have genuine qualms. Genuine qualms. You look down on them. In fact, if you are in the company of others who have similar attitudes, you spend your time making mockery of those who can't. Making mockery of them. You'll be there assuming it's wine. You sort of take your glass of wine and then take a sip and then you laugh and say, imagine, the guys are thinking you sin. Sinning with just a drop of this. I mean, come on. So by the time those guys realize what Jesus has done for them, that becomes your attitude. And this attitude of despising, looking down on, is the one that disrupts fellowship. That's what it does. It disrupts fellowship. You have an attitude that amounts to away from. Away from. You are below me. Sort out your struggles there. Sort them out. But why should I inhibit my own personal enjoyment concerning those things that Jesus has done for me? Why? Why should I do that? You know, when we were growing up as Christians. Let me add one more, which I haven't talked about. Christians did not go for movies. We did not go to stadiums to watch football or whatever. We just did it. In those days, God. In fact, I probably said it once here. We had, at UNSA, we had our UCF chairman. He later on became a bishop in the Anglican Church. In fact, he's the chief bishop of the Anglican Church right now in Botswana. And that particular day, because of his background, he had been brought up, I think, in England or something. So because of his background, there was a movie that was showing at UNSA. And he went for the movie. And it was in non-Christians who were saying, hey, but born again, for many more. And they made such a ruckus that the guy had to leave. And there was almost an impeachment of him in the fellowship. And that's how serious it was in those days. Christians did not watch movies. And they didn't go to watch sport in stadiums. So the last thing you want to be caught with is a Liverpool t-shirt. In those days. So the times have changed. Eh? But in those days, you sort of just waited for to hear the results. That they beat that other team. Okay, so now imagine in that context, that's the example I'm giving. You know, it's Avengers has come. Okay. Okay, so where you come from, there's a lot of excitement, you know? Avengers, and you're looking forward. And then you come into a Christian culture where, you know, even when you mention, oh, this Saturday my family will plan to go and watch Avengers, you just see, you know, the eyes almost falling out of their sockets. Now the attitude obviously becomes, hey, but why should I miss Avengers because of you? What? Huh? And it's your problem. That becomes the attitude. We are going to watch whether you like it or not. And that's what Paul is talking about here. This sense of superiority that in the end disrupts fellowship. Because you are insisting there's nothing wrong, you know there's nothing wrong, and you're still going to go ahead. But you see, Paul, being the master spiritual teacher that he was, inspired by the Spirit, did not just seek to correct one side. He also sought to correct the other. So those who can do something that is really a matter of opinion, strong as it might be, religious as it might be, have something they shouldn't do, despise it. On the other hand, those who again have religious feelings, strong religious feelings, but this time it is in terms of them not being able to do something, that they also need to be corrected if we're going to have real Christian fellowship. And it is this: they must not judge. They must not judge. Verse 3. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains, and let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats, for God has welcomed him. Now, the word judgment, past judgment there, is a negative phrase. It is best understood as passing condemnation. So this is not simply saying, don't make an opinion about it. Rather, it is saying, don't make the negative opinion. Don't condemn the individual who is doing this. And again, let's face it, brethren, that's the tendency of those who cannot eat anything. In other words, those whose spiritual liberty does not allow them to do that. It is to condemn those who can. And the normal condemnation amounts to this. Either the person is terribly backslidden, or they're not even saved. Because, you know, you can't. You're saved, and then you're doing this. You can't. And I repeat, in those days, you are going to watch a movie. A Christian at a stadium. You must be backslidden. That was the kind of general atmosphere. So if it was an elder who ended up being there doing that, you'd really end up with if it was a Kawata Baptist Constitution, 25% of the members asking for a members meeting with an agenda very clear to cast a new vote on this person. And the person would just know that I won't go through this because the conclusion in the hearts of God's people is that I'm either backslidden or my true colors have finally shown that I'm not say. And sadly, this feeling can be very strong. Very strong. That it literally disrupts church life altogether. The atmosphere in the church can be electrically charged, that you know that fellowship is impossible until this matter is dealt with. And even when you say, okay, but show me the verse that says this, they'll obviously try somehow to show the verse, but it will be like five steps to get there. You know, it's supposed to glorify God. That's the first principle. Now, one way in which you glorify God is, number two, the way you live. That's the second principle. Now, the way you live, the Bible speaks about works of darkness. That's the third principle. And Lord, and by the time you get into the fifth principle, definitely Avengers is included. And therefore, a Christian must not watch Avengers. It's very real. And we need to vote on this. We can't have an elder who does this out. The fellowship is disrupted. That elder finally just says with his family, let's move to another church. And when people come to hear why the split happened, because other people followed that elder, they hear it was over Avengers. And they can't believe it. But it was because of this strong feeling that a person who does this is either backslidden or is not even born again. And Paul is saying here, don't do that. Of course, he'll develop this further because it's such a big thing. He will. I mean, the whole of chapter 14 and halfway through chapter 15 is all dealing with this topic. Tell me another topic that is dealt with at such length. It's because church unity matters. Love must be there in the church, and love must express itself in this way, where I learn to accept my brother or my sister first, and then we deal with these things in the long haul, recognizing that we're coming from different backgrounds. In fact, Paul ends by saying this. And let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats. Listen, for God has welcomed him. Now that's crucial. Again, Paul opens it up a little further, this time in chapter 15. Because if you think about it, God welcomes us at the point of our repentance from sin, while we still have a lot of baggage in our lives. He welcomes us. And then, while we are in fellowship with him, he continues sanctifying us. And it's a lifelong process. That's how God welcomes us and receives us. And Paul will be arguing later that we must accept one another the way we are accepted by God in Christ. Accept it first and continue dealing with these things in fellowship. And he's saying here, God has welcomed you. So who are you to chase him out? It's not your church. It's God's church. So your qualms are yours. They're not God's qualms. He's welcoming him. And the Lord will be dealing with him over the long haul, just as he'll be dealing with you over the long haul. So, don't do it. Be like God. Well, very quickly then, as we close. As you can see, this is a very real pastoral issue, which we must take seriously even at KBC, especially because we are in the city of Lusaka. It's the capital city of the nation. People will be coming into Lusaka from different parts of the country, different parts of the continent, different parts of the world. And it's crucial for us to realize that people come from different backgrounds. And these things are deeply seated. I think we talked yesterday about some of those things from our African-American brethren coming, where now we start accusing them of being charismatic based on our own context. And that's just their religious background. So it's very easy for us to simply say, okay, no more African-American preachers here. That's one way. Or we up our game. We recognize that we are in an international church, and people will be coming from all kinds of backgrounds. And consequently, we need to, as it were, respond appropriately instead of looking down on them in terms of despising or in terms of condemning them, in terms of they must be, what, half heretics or something. And consequently, we want to keep away from them. It's a pastoral issue. We need to grow in it. As I said at the beginning, the church will never be homogeneous. Never. Especially in a cosmopolitan context like Lusaka is. It won't happen. And therefore, it is important for us to have the attitude that says, you have professed faith in Christ, I'm going to be your brother, I'm going to be your sister, we're going to walk together. We're going to discuss these issues, but we'll discuss them having accepted each other first. And that's what we will see throughout this chapter and a half. It is exactly that attitude. But I want to repeat, it demands maturity. It demands maturity. And the Apostle Paul will challenge us on that as we go through this chapter. Amen.